You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G. D-O-D-G-E-R-S-T.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Locked On Dodgers is the daily podcast covering the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder, Baseball Essential, flying solo today, and I've got a lot of fun stuff to talk with you about. As you know, there was, or as you've probably heard, there was news at the end of last week that Major League Baseball will be experimenting with some new rules in the minor leagues. I'm going to spend about two-thirds of this episode talking about those rules, giving some thoughts on those. But before that, I'm going to talk Dodger news and thoughts, just kind of some miscellaneous thoughts I've had this weekend while watching the Dodgers. So that's the plan for today. But first, I want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, first, there's a bit of news, although it is perhaps the most underwhelming news in baseball history. Clayton Kershaw was named the opening day starter for the Dodgers. He will start in Colorado on April 1st. That means he won't be starting the home opener on April 9th. Really, for me, there was never any question. Of course, it was going to be Kershaw, and there was some talk that maybe, these really were conversations, that maybe they'd rather have Kershaw start the home opener since there will be fans in the stands, blah, 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 blah. But for me, there's no honor in starting the home opener, and honestly, Kershaw might prefer to not be pitching the day of the home opener so that he can enjoy whatever ceremony they do that day. And so it just makes sense. Kershaw is, whether he's still the best starting pitcher on the Dodgers, and I think there's a case that he is. I don't think I'd put money on him being their best starter this year, but he may have been their best starter last year, and he definitely is the leader of that staff regardless. And so in my opinion, Kershaw should be the opening day starter as long as Kershaw is wearing a Dodger uniform. And at least for now, it appears that Dave Roberts agrees. Other thoughts I had this weekend, I'm watching Sunday night's game right now, actually. I don't record during regular season games because I learned my lesson a couple years ago when the Dodgers were down 8-3 to the Mets, and I recorded a whole bummer episode, and then the Dodgers came back and won the game, and I had to re-record the whole episode. But for spring training games, since the results don't matter, the eighth inning just ended. Actually, the top of the eighth just ended. Blake Treinen just got the third out as I'm recording this. And Treinen actually, for the second out, he got a strikeout on a high fastball, and it looked like it may have been a four-seamer. And as you know, Treinen is a sinker ball pitcher. But when I talked with Professor Barton Smith a few weeks ago, about one of his thoughts was that more sinker baller pitchers should work in a four seamer into their repertoire, a high four seamer, to get that different plane and different look. And Treinen got a swinging strikeout on what looked like a high four seamer. And you know, I've talked in the past about how my only real gripe with Treinen last year was that he wasn't missing as many bats as you might expect him to, and he does get a lot of, you know, ground balls and weak contact, so he got by. But if he could get more strikeouts, that would be awesome, and perhaps a high four-seamer may be one of the secrets to doing that. So that was just something I noticed when I was watching the game. Another thought I had this weekend watching Garrett Clevenger pitch, and I'm not the first person to notice that he looks a lot like Caleb Ferguson out there, and I thought it was interesting how, Caleb Ferguson, he was a starter, and then they turned him into a reliever, and suddenly last year he was one of the best relievers in baseball. Like, he was dominant, and then he got hurt, and so what did the Dodgers do? They just go out and trade for Caleb Ferguson part two. Like, Garrett Clevenger has looked really, really potentially dominant, you know, and I'm not just looking at results in spring training, because as you know, those don't really matter, but just the way he throws the ball, his stuff, everything about it, he's really exciting. It seems like he is going to be that lefty in the bullpen along with Victor Gonzalez, who can get lefties and righties out and just can kind of do it all. And so I'm pretty impressed with Andrew Friedman once again that Caleb Ferguson goes down and he just goes and trades for Fergie part two. And then my last thought this weekend was about DJ Peters. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter and stuff, including by me, that about DJ Peters. He's had a lot of really good at bats. He's worked walks, showing plate discipline, and I'm a little bit worried that people are getting overexcited or setting their expectations too high, because the fact is DJ Peters has always taken walks. He has always known how to work the count. In his minor league career, he has a 10.3% career walk rate in the minors, which is really good. I mean, that's basically adding nearly 100 points of on-base percentage over your batting average. And if you can do that, you know, if you can even bat 250, you're a valuable player with a 350 on-base percentage. That has never been DJ Peters' problem. The problem is, in the minor leagues, his walk rate is 10.3%, and his strikeout rate is 30.9%. He has exactly three times as many strikeouts as walks. And the 30.9% strikeout rate, you know, to put that, you know, if he gets 650 plate appearances, that's almost 200 strikeouts in a season. And so that's the concern, and we haven't really seen that being that much better this spring. In fact, I mean, obviously it's a tiny sample size, but his strikeout rate this spring is actually a little bit higher than that, I think. And so, you know, DJ Peters is going to have to start putting the bat on the ball more consistently in order to ever be a starter for the Dodgers. I am glad that he's been getting a lot of playing time this spring, if for no other reason than to showcase him, because chances are some team is going to need an outfielder, whether because of injury or whatever. And I've said it before that team could be the Dodgers, because they do have A.J. Pollock as their starting left fielder. And for that matter, Cody Bellinger hasn't yet played a game in the Cactus League. So the Dodgers may need DJ Peters this year. But if not them, somebody might. And he's 25 years old now. I feel like this is the year he needs to. It's kind of a make or break year for him. He's going to be in the big leagues, I would think, with some team this year to get a chance to see if he is a big league outfielder. But if it's going to be with the Dodgers, I feel like he's going to need to figure out that strikeout rate. And then the last bit of news is just, again, that Dave Roberts said Cody Bellinger will be playing in his first Cactus League game on Tuesday. And we really won't know what to expect until we see it. Cody had his shoulder surgery last year and is apparently recovered. But, you know, it's tough to tell what to expect from him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets off to a slow start this season. But hopefully he's totally healthy and everything else will work itself out. I think that's all I have for Dodger thoughts this weekend. Juan Toribio had a video talking about Corey Seager's potential to be an MVP candidate that I thought I might talk about a little bit. I will, when I come back from the break, I'll talk a little bit about that. And then I will talk about the minor league experiments that that Major League Baseball is putting into place. So keep it locked on Dodgers. BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football's over, but the NCAA tournament is coming up. Just had Selection Sunday, plus you have the NBA and the NHL in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline also has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It is the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with promo code LOCKED15. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Also, if you're looking to join a NCAA basketball tournament pool, go to the Locked On Podcast Network's Tournament Bracket Challenge on ESPN. The link is in the show description. You can join our group and you can go up against other Locked On fans to see how you stack up. All right, I am back. Let's talk a little bit about Corey Seager. Juan Toribio, as I said, he's the new MLB.com Dodgers beat reporter, and he had a video, and one of his segments was talking about Corey Seager as a legit MVP candidate, and I just wanted to dig into that a little bit. Basically, offensively, Corey Seager, I feel like he's always going to be at least in the conversation. When he's healthy, he is such a good hitter. He hit another home run on Sunday. He has four spring homers now. Basically, he's picked up where he left off in the postseason, and that's a really good sign that hopefully he will keep that going in the regular season this year. Basically, when he's healthy, he is one of the best hitters in baseball. It will be interesting to see, because even at his best, I mean, he hasn't had that otherworldly season. He is just consistent, just solid, really good. He hasn't had a season like Bryce Harper's 2015, for example. He's just a guy you can count on to go out and put up about a 6-win season when he's healthy, and that's awesome. But he's going to need to step it up a little bit more than that if he is going to have a legit chance at an MVP, just because 6 wins isn't an MVP season most years. But the thing is, I wonder if we really are if we've seen that. Sorry, I just got distracted because as I'm talking, DJ Peters just struck out again. Just to go back to last segment a little bit, but if what we saw from Corey Seager in October and are seeing now in March, if that is really, it could be that Seager has taken a step forward, figure something out. I mean, he's 27 years old, almost 27 years old, and that is, historically, that was when you considered a player's prime, 27 or 28 years old. And there's been talk that maybe the prime age has moved up a little bit younger, but if Corey is really coming into his prime, it's not unheard of to think that he is better now than he's ever been, that he has figured something out, that he's at his best now. And so it wouldn't be a shock at all to see Corey put up an 8, 8.5, even 9 win season in 2021. And that would be enough to have him in contention for the MVP. Some of it will come down to defense, just because it's kind of surprising. When he's been healthy, he has been a good defensive shortstop, even though he's definitely not flashy. I can't remember very many times I've seen him dive for a ball, but I think he's positioned well, and he gets to the balls. He has a strong arm. He's a good shortstop. The question will be, can he be a really good defensive shortstop? Because in this day and age, with everybody so aware of advanced stats, he's going to need to have defensive value in addition to being one of the best hitters in baseball in order to really be an MVP candidate. So anyway, that's some thoughts I had on that. Corey is very good, and I'm excited to see what he could do. So now I just want to talk a little bit about these minor league baseball experiments. There's different ones at all the different levels. I'm going to start with AAA and go down to the lowest levels and just kind of give some of my thoughts. Some of these I have a lot of thoughts on. Some I feel like I should and I don't. And some, let's start with AAA. In AAA, they are making the bases bigger. Right now in Major League Baseball, the bases are 15 inches square. So 15 by 15 by 15 by 15. And they're bumping that up to 18 inches square, which doesn't seem like a lot. But when you think about from first base to second base, that's cutting the distance from first to second base by 6 inches, 3 inches on each base, which, and you think about stolen bases and how often a guy is out by inches, now he might be safe by inches. And so part of the reason that they're doing this is to increase the success rate of stolen bases, and hopefully, increase the number of stolen base attempts, because if guys have a better chance of making it, they will go. And stolen bases are exciting. So that's part of it. The other reason that they're doing it is just to increase safety, because, a first baseman, if he has 3 extra inches on the base, he's less likely to accidentally get clipped as they're going by, or on purpose if Manny Machado is playing, safety reasons. And I do think the stolen bases are probably the bigger motivator. And I'm torn a little bit. I was a pitcher, and so part of me thinks, why would you want to make it easier for guys to steal bases? But I do, I'm always torn, because It's kind of a running joke that everybody thinks the brand of baseball that was played when they were kids was the best brand of baseball. And for me, I grew up with, you know, the Cardinals with Vince Coleman and Willie McGee and all those guys stealing a ton of bases. You know, Ricky Henderson played his entire career in my lifetime. Tim Raines, all those guys. The big base stealing era was when I began to love baseball. And so there's part of me that I do have a real fondness for stolen bases. And I don't know if that's nostalgia or if it's that actually is a better brand of baseball. And so I don't really know. I have a hard time knowing if I'm being intellectually honest when I talk about, yeah, I like stolen bases and I think baseball is better when guys are stealing bases. Is it, or am I just being nostalgic? I don't know. But I do think that it is more exciting. You know, we saw Mookie Betts last year in the postseason, what he could do with his legs. He'd get on base and then steal bases, put himself into scoring position, and it was fun. To everybody except Rays fans, watching Mookie Betts in the World Series last year was a ton of fun. And so I like what they're doing, and we're going to talk more about other things that they're going to be doing in the minor leagues to increase stolen bases with some of these other things. But in AAA, they're doing the larger bases. So I'm going to take one more break, and then when I come back, I'll talk about AA and the two different A-ball levels. So stay locked on Dodgers. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar in the market, for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing, low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. And now it's time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is Toffee Almond against Mint Brownie. Personally, I would definitely vote for Mint Brownie here. I don't care much for almond flavor things. In fact, if I'm being honest, Toffee Almond is the only Built Bar I've tried that I didn't like. But that's just my own personal aversion to almond-flavored things. And Mint Brownie, I can't think of many things that I like more than the Built Bar Mint Brownie Bar. So, you know, go and vote for Mint Brownie if you want to. To vote, you can go to builtbar.com/pages/brackets. And you can see the brackets and you can vote. And we will finally get to the bottom of figuring out which Built Bar is best. You can also follow them on Twitter at bar_built. And while you're at builtbar.com, go ahead and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. We're counting down the days to opening day here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Next Wednesday, March 24th, the Locked On MLB podcast begins one of our biggest events of the year, the Locked On MLB Division Preview Series. All of our local experts in every MLB market answer the biggest questions around each team. There is no better or easier way to get baseball smart before opening day. Subscribe today to Locked On MLB on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, I am back and going to talk about the rest of these minor league experiments and my thoughts on them. We already covered AAA, the bigger bases. In AA, they are looking into banning the shift. This one has maybe gotten the most passionate response from baseball Twitter, and perhaps the one I care the least about, and I don't quite understand why, but I'll try to explain to you how I feel about it, and we'll see. But here's the rule. The defensive team must have a minimum of 4 players on the infield, each of whom must have both feet completely in front of the outfield grass. Depending on the preliminary results of this experimental rule change, MLB may require 2 infielders to be positioned entirely on each side of second base in the second half of the AA season. These restrictions on defensive positioning are intended to increase the batting average on balls in play. So to start with, you can still shift. You can have guys on the other side of the field, but you can't have an infielder playing in the outfield, basically. And then if they, you know, depending on the results of that, then they may, and I don't know if this means if they like the results of that or if they don't think it does enough, then they may require shortstop and third baseman on the left side of second base and second baseman and first baseman on the right side of first base, second base. And basically, it's stuff that we've seen. People have been talking about banning the shift for years. And for me, like I said, I don't really care. I'm not itching to ban the shift. But if they do, it won't bother me at all. I'm okay with that. You know, part of it is people talk like it's a slippery slope. Well, you know, why if you ban the shift, what's next? You know, but the thing is, there's already rules in the rule book about where guys can and can't position themselves. It's in the rule book that every player, except for the catcher, has to be positioned in fair territory. The catcher can be positioned in foul territory, and everybody else has to be in fair territory. So there's already rules there. This just would be adding more rules to that. And I don't really have an issue with that. I feel like it has become groupthink almost that, for people to, somebody decided, some smart person said, oh, I ran the numbers and banning the shift won't actually help anything. And everybody has just kind of accepted that. And that might be true, but I don't see any problem at all with experimenting with this in the minor leagues. I think, great, let's see what happens. We have data on the batting average and balls in play in Double A the last several years. And now let's see if banning the shift changes that. And then, you know, in the second half, okay, let's ban it even more and see what, and then we'll have data. I am a big fan of having data on changes. And so for them to experiment with this, see the effects and see if it has the intended effect and see if there are any unknown unintended effects, that's a great thing to do in the minor leagues. It's going to be a little bit tricky for the minor leaguers, you know, as you're coming through the system. Oh, I'm at the level where you can't shift now. And I am interested to see if teams actually take some of this stuff into account. If you have a, you know, a defensive prospect, are you going to maybe be hesitant to put him in Double A where he can't be shifting? You know, or, you know, we used to see it a lot when the Dodgers had their Triple A, I think in Albuquerque, where the ball just flies. And so a lot of times with power prospects, the Dodgers would entirely or mostly skip AAA with those guys. They'd go straight from AA to the big leagues or just a stop off in AAA because they didn't want their power hitters to go to Albuquerque and think, you know, and get a big head or whatever. Or even worse, they didn't want their non-power hitting prospects to go to Albuquerque and think they were power hitters because anybody can hit a home run in Albuquerque. So I wonder if we'll see decisions on where guys are going to play, like what level, based on some of these rules. And the AA one might be a big one that might lead to that. Just interrupting myself, I'll get to high A and low A in a second. Just after I talked about Garrett Clevenger being Caleb Ferguson part two, he has come into this game that's on right now in the top of the ninth inning, and he's kind of getting knocked around. He did have a strikeout, but he's given up a few hits. He did get hurt by an error, but yeah, so just goes to show even Garrett Clevenger is human, and you know, maybe Jeff can't even record during spring training games, at least not if I'm going to talk. They had some, yeah, I don't know. I'm still excited about Garrett Clevenger, though, even though this is a poor performance that he's putting on right now. Okay, back to the minor league rules. High A, they have what they're calling the step-off rule. I'll read it to you. Pitchers are required to disengage the rubber prior to throwing to any base with the penalty of a balk in the event the pitcher fails to comply. MLB implemented a similar rule in the second half of the Atlantic League season in 2019, which resulted in a significant increase in stolen base attempts and an improved success rate after adoption of the rule. So basically, this means a pitcher has to step off before he can make a pickoff throw. And this would look different for right-handers versus left-handers. Right now, right-handed pitchers almost always their pickoff move is a spin move, where obviously their foot comes off the rubber during the pickoff throw most of the time, but in under this new rule, they would actually have to step off the back of the rubber and then throw over to first base, which greatly increases the amount of time it takes to throw over to first base. For a left-hander, it's in some ways even worse because left-handers, most of the time, a pickoff move to first base, his back foot, his left foot never does leave the rubber. He steps towards first base and throws over that way. We do see, you know, Kershaw has a pretty good move, what they call a flip move, or, you know, he'll step off really quick and kind of not step towards the base at all, just step off and throw over to first base. And that's kind of in the rules, it says if the pitcher's foot is on the rubber, he has to step towards the base he's throwing towards. And so that's why lefties will step off the back of the mound and throw over to first base all in one motion without stepping towards first. And so it seems like that will have to be the more common move for left-handed pitchers, would be that flip move. For right-handed pitchers, it's just going to be a slower pickoff move. So it's easy to see why and how this would increase the stolen base attempts and the improved success rate, because it makes the pickoff moves even slower. And in low A, they're doing different things to make it easier to steal bases. In low A, there are three new rules, and split between there, because there's two low A leagues, the Southeast League and the West League. Both leagues will have a rule that pitchers are limited to two pickoff throws or stepping off the rubber in any plate appearance when there's at least one runner on base. So stepping off counts as a pickoff throw. Pickoff throw obviously counts as a pickoff throw. They can only do that twice, with the exception they can do it a third time, but if they don't pick the guy off, it's a balk. And so this one is really interesting to me. My instinct is to not like the rule that limits the number of pickoff throws, just because it makes it too easy to steal a base. Because after that second throw, well, you can get a huge lead. But the fact that that you can throw over one more time, you just have to pick them off, it will limit, it will cut down. You know, obviously, guys can get a little bit bigger lead after the second throw, but they can't get a huge lead, because a huge lead, they're going to get picked off easily, and that's allowed. So I saw Dave Stewart had some thoughts on this, and I feel like he hadn't actually read the rule, because, and one of my biggest pet peeves, and I'm not, you know, picking on Dave Stewart here, anybody who has a strong opinion on something they don't understand, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. My goal in life is to never have a strong opinion on something until I understand it. And so I think it will give guys maybe an extra step on their lead, which will help them. Obviously, I talked about guys often get thrown out stealing by inches, and an extra step would have prevented that. And so it's going to help with stolen bases. I don't think they're going to run crazy, but so I kind of like this rule. I like them experimenting with it for sure. And you'll be able to see, okay, how crazy did this make things? Then in the Southeast League of Low A, it says, in addition to the limitation on step-offs and pickoffs, MLB will expand testing of the automated ball strike system that began in the Atlantic League and the Arizona Fall League to select Low A Southeast games to assist home plate umpires with calling balls and strikes, ensure because a strike zone is called, and determine the optimal strike zone for the system. So, robot umps. It looks like it won't be all games. It says select games, and it says to assist home plate umpires with calling balls and strikes. So, I'm interested to see how they implement it. But however it is, I am strongly in favor of robot umps. I am a big fan of the human element in baseball, but I get my human element from the players. I don't need human element in rules enforcement. For me, the strike zone should be the strike zone, and a pitch in the strike zone should be a strike, and a pitch out of the strike zone should be a ball. And I like one of their stated purposes is to determine the optimal strike zone for the system. That's one of the things I really like about the idea of robot umps is, you know what, like right now, if MLB decided, oh, there's too many strikeouts, let's make the strike zone smaller, let's move it to the top of the knees instead of the bottom of the knees, it's not that easy, because you still have human beings calling strikes and balls, and it's guys calling, you know, just telling them, okay, we're moving up the strike zone, doesn't change the fact that they've been calling it a certain way for years. And so it's not as easy. Whereas if it was a computer calling it, you just tappy tappy on the keyboard. Okay, top of knees instead of bottom of knees. Boom. You just change the strike zone and you can affect the game much more quickly that way, which I'm great with. I love the idea of, okay, let's alter the strike. They've done it all throughout history of messing with the strike zone to improve, increase offense or decrease offense or whatever. So I am a big fan of robot umps. I know some people love catcher framing and it would make them sad to see that element of the game go away. And for me, I want strikes called strikes and balls called balls. It's that simple for me. In the low A West League, they're not doing the robot umps. Instead, it says, in addition to the limitation on step-offs and pickoffs, following successful pace of game rules testing among Florida State League teams in 2019, on-field timers, one in the outfield, two behind home plate between the dugouts, will be implemented to enforce time limits between delivery of pitches, inning breaks, and pitching changes. The on-field timer used in Low A West will include new regulations beyond the system currently used in AAA and AA to reduce game length and improve the pace of play. So they're going to have a clock on, a pitch clock, basically. I think I read it's going to be 15 seconds, which I love. I am a big fan of a pitch clock. I think, you know, I'm not in favor of any idea that cuts down on the amount of baseball we get, but the amount of dead time between pitches, I love the idea of getting rid of that. There's been studies done comparing games in the 80s to games now, and the games now are 30 minutes longer, and some of that, like 8 minutes of that, is longer commercial breaks, but most of it is, it just takes forever between pitches. And so, you know, the average game has 300 pitches. If you could cut 5 seconds off between each of those pitches, that's 1500 seconds. And I don't know how to do the math, but let's see, 1200 would be 20 minutes. So 1500 would be 25 minutes. You could cut 25 minutes off just by cutting off 5 seconds between each pitch. And it's not that simple, but it's low hanging fruit. And that is without removing any action. And for me, as a dad, and as a dad living an hour later than where my favorite team plays, my kids would get to watch more Dodger baseball if the games are shorter. I love baseball, and I root for extra innings at every game, but I'd root even harder for extra innings if the first 9 innings only took 2.5 hours. And I would love it if my kids could watch more Dodger games with me and still get to bed in time to get up reasonably early for school. Even in the summertime, it's like, you know, games start at 8 o'clock here, 8:10 where I live. And if the games are going to be over by 10:45, you know, I can let my kids stay up and watch a Dodger game till 10:45 in the summertime. But if the games are going to go till 11:30, it's like, I don't know, man. That's extreme for these kids. So for me as a dad, as a baseball fan, if you can give me the same amount of baseball in a shorter amount of time, I'm all for it. So anyway, that is the rules. Overall, I am in favor of them testing this stuff out in the minor leagues, seeing what works, what doesn't, and I'm excited to see the results of this and see how I think the robot umps are definitely coming to the big leagues. This other stuff, we'll see. I think banning the shift, I think it'll be good to get data on that. All of these things will be good to get data, see if it has the intended consequences without any of the unintended consequences. So that's what I am looking forward to seeing. And with that, I'm going to be done for today. Thank you all for listening. If you haven't yet subscribed to Locked On Dodgers, please do so wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it, go ahead and subscribe there to help other people find us. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK. We are here every weekday morning. We hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play a podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs. They're my Los Angeles. Your Los Angeles. Our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!